Okay. Podcasting from a town called Manalapan, New Jersey. This is That Oneness Guy, a podcast covering the many aspects and elements that embody oneness. I am your host, Danny Rongo. As an author, a singer, songwriter, and podcaster, I am spreading my message of oneness, as you know, basically to anyone who will listen. Okay, so first, if you haven't seen it yet, these podcasts now have an official home. That's right. So you can now watch and listen to all of the podcasts from That Oneness Guy, all on the newly designed and interactive website. Just visit thatonenessguy.com to see it all. The site also contains my blogs and the new vlogs that I've recently started to record as well. So by all means, please check it out. So as I like to always say, let's get right into podcasting. You are listening to episode number 25, an interview with spiritual author Andrew Seton. Let me tell you a little about Andrew. Andrew Seton is an author, educator, better life counselor, and mentor for spiritual awakening. For more than four decades, he delved deeply into educational philosophy and psychology, old wisdom and new science, reports of higher consciousness, and a wide range of personal development, holistic wellness, and spiritual awareness practices. As Andrew experienced all the personal ups and downs of his life, his working life was quite varied, but mostly in education. He had many different roles in that field, most of them relating to education of the whole person. His PhD thesis was titled Investing in Intelligence: An Inquiry into Educational Paradigm Change. Andrew came to see that in our world, we are generally making some deeply flawed assumptions about knowledge, human nature, and quality of life. In 2006, he resigned from a two-year stint as an education academic in order to focus on unlearning his education and other conditioning, and on awakening the fuller functioning that he had come to see so clearly is possible and desirable. Andrew has recently experienced major changes in his consciousness and way of being in the world. Throughout 2017 and 2018, he was very focused on living the insights and practices he describes in his book, Spiritual Awakening Made Simple: How to See Through the Mist of the Mind to the Peace of the Here and Now. In September of 2018, Andrew's spiritual awakening began in earnest with a beautiful dream followed by energy flows through his body. Through his writings, talks, and one-on-one counseling support and mentoring via online conferencing, Andrew now helps others to clear away the mist of the conditioned mind and awaken to their true nature as the peace-filled, observing awareness beyond the mind. He speaks to groups, podcasters, and radio interviewers about how, contrary to popular belief and experience, spiritual awakening is both natural and achievable. So now, my friends, let me tell you briefly about how Andrew and I came to meet. It was through a Zoom meeting hosted by a mutual friend of ours, I might add, and fellow spiritual advocate, Caroline Chang. Caroline hosts the Awaken to Oneness Radio, which obviously many of my listeners know because she's been a guest on my show in the past and I've been on hers. But Caroline was kind of holding just a casual meeting with some of her friends and followers, and she had Andrew and myself happen to be part of that group. So Caroline introduced us, and Andrew and I had a chance to find out a little about each other. And it was just a blast. And since that meeting, Andrew and I also had our own Zoom meeting where we got to know each other a little better. And since that, I have read his book, Spiritual Awakening Made Simple, which is what we're going to be discussing here today. And needless to say, my friends, I was captivated from the very first page. So with that said, let me get right to the chase and introduce my new friend and brother from down under, I'd like to say, if you may, Andrew Seton. How you doing, Andrew?
Hey, Denny. Yeah, really well, thank you. And great to be here having a chat with you.
Awesome. So first of all, just, you know, explain to everybody where you're from, because I obviously mentioned Down Under, and right now this is Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern time, and for you it is?
9 a.m. the next day. At 9 a.m. the next day. Yeah, and I'm in Eastern Australia. If anyone, any of you listeners know Australia's layout, I'm in the state of Queensland, sort of subtropical, but in an hour in from the coast. So quite a moderate and temperate climate, very pleasant. And it's a beautiful spring morning right now.
Ain't that some, which is why obviously Andrew and I had to speak in depth about when to schedule this podcast, because I was like, all right, when is it best for you? So Andrew said, well, 7 p.m. Eastern time-ish would be about 9 a.m. in the morning for me. But it's just wild how these meetings like this allow us to, you know, speak, you know, like around the world, right? And just talk and have discussions about the things that we do. And, you know, like I said in that top piece, Andrew, I love the book, and I'm excited to, you know, have you explain certain aspects about it. And my friends, as you can see right here, I'm, you know, for my friends who are just listening to this, I'm going to be sharing the image for any YouTube followers. This is the cover, Spiritual Awakening Made Simple. Andrew, tell us first off where they can find your information and this book.
Thanks, Danny. Well, the book is everywhere now. It's only been out for a few months, but it's on Amazon and pretty much every online bookstore and many physical bookstores. It's available online as both an ebook and a paperback. Mm-hmm. I would encourage your listeners, if during the podcast they feel inspired, to get hold of a copy, to purchase perhaps the paperback, because the book really is a manual, something that I encourage people to read over and over and then dip in over and over. So having a physical copy in your home or where you spend all your time would be a big advantage, I would think, for many people over having just the electronic version.
Mm-hmm. And I can attest to that, my friends, because I've been thumbing through it again myself here quite a few times since I've completed it a couple of weeks ago, and take them up on that. Buy the paperback.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, thanks, Danny. And in terms of other information about the book and about me and about the mentoring that I offer and so forth, I've got a website, awakeningmadesimple.org. People can find some recent comments about the book and info about, as I say, the mentoring that I offer, and links to quite a few interviews that I've done in recent months, and also the preface and introduction to the book and other information about the book.
Wonderful, wonderful. That sounds great. So I'll tell you what, my friend, let's get right into it. I always like to start off with something that I know resonates whenever I'm being asked about my books, when someone comes to me and says, Danny, why did you write your book? So Andrew, I'm going to put that out to you just like it's to me. Tell us all why you came to write this book, Spiritual Awakening Made Simple.
Yeah, well, that question can be such a big one. Right. And I know that you have in mind lots of things for us to touch on during our discussion. So I won't spend the hour that I could answering that question.
You
mentioned in the bio, which of course is one of 100 different bios that could be, that I could sort of pen, you know, about my background and where I've come from and, you know, who I am. You know, you mentioned in the bio that my background has kind of been, as it were, all my adult life, looking deeply into what's the nature of human consciousness and what's the nature of the mind and how it works. How do we educate, in inverted commas, the human mind to be fully blossoming, fully flowering, you know? And most of your listeners will be very in tune already, Danny, with the understanding that the human mind and the human being is much more than our intellect, you know, our mental faculties, our faculty of reason, often put forward, proposed as the most wonderful, admirable and desirable and valuable faculty that we have as human beings. But my background of research and my own experience suggests that's not the case at all. Mm. All the troubles that we have as individuals and as a human culture arise from mistaken assumptions we have about who we are, about the mind, and in particular about the ideas that we hold in our mind about who we are and about the world. So that's something we'll get into more as we talk. But to come to your question more specifically, Danny, why did I write the book? After all those investigations into what it is to be a human being and what being a human possibly could be, but also at the same time dealing with all the personal challenges, ups and downs of my own life, and around the very end of 2014, beginning to experience a complete upending of my life, tremendous upheaval took place with moving from the place and the lifestyle that I'd had, no longer having a career, ending a 30-year marriage, and a bunch of other things thrown in that mix. I was really thrown completely into a challenge of dealing with trying to make sense of who I am and what this world is all about.
I hear you.
On a certain level, those changes were chosen. I say on a certain level because there was a kind of this sense that I need to make these changes. They were initiated by me or some part of me, but they were not initiated quickly or easily, I can assure you and your listeners. So tremendous, almost as if my life and up until that point had become, the slate had been wiped clean. And then I really started to need to and want to draw on what I'd come to understand, looking into so many ideas and philosophies and practices and organizations and stories about from different quarters of humanity. You know, this is what's true. This is what's real. This is what life's all about. I tried to kind of draw on what's real here, you know, and I've been through so much. I've looked at so much stuff for decades and decades. I need to pull it all together here now. Yeah. To make my life viable. And I don't want to just make another life that's kind of manageable. I want the real thing here. You know, so I was really looking at how do I pull all this together? And of course, over those years in the most recent decades, say, I'd read different perspectives on going beyond the prevalent assumptions in our culture about, you know, the human mind and what human experience can be. Mm-hmm. I'd read different people's points of views about their experiences of higher consciousness and so forth, but I still didn't feel that I could look anywhere and see the answer coherently put together and practically put together. Here's how it makes sense and here's how you need to proceed. And I put it in the most succinctly, over a few years from 2015, it came together.
Yeah.
Very, very incredible struggle that I went through, but I finally figured out how it all fits together. And particularly in 2017, I began really applying in my life the insights and practices that I describe in my book, Spiritual Awakening Made Simple. And my experience was, A, that when I kind of figured it out, it actually did come together actually as something quite simple.
Yeah.
That was the first surprising thing. But the second thing was that it brought about a shift in my way of experiencing my life, my way of being in my life, I might say, that was quite subtle, yes, but profound at the same time. In other words, I finally found a way to give my lifelong desire to awaken the more comprehensive functioning that's possible as a human being, to give that awakening some traction. Because I'd heard for decades and decades from this quarter, from this person, you know, this idea, this strategy, this, all bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And they were kind of, yeah, that rings true. And yet, what do I do with that?
You know, how many times, exactly, Andrew, how many times have we heard it like that? You know what I mean? You heard, this is the way, that's the way, that the way. But, you know, I always revert back to when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, as you know, and you were ready. You actually welcomed all the change in your life. And I'm sure you can attest to too that that's why it all started to make more sense to you individually before you were able to share it with the world.
That's right. And that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
Because I found, bloody hell, it's actually simple. And here is how it works. And there was nowhere in my lifelong search around this planet where I'd come to find a concise and coherent laying out of, here's how it makes sense, and this is what you can do about it.
Wow.
And so I wrote the book, and I was so glad to get that word simple in the title, Spiritual Awakening Made Simple. Not quick and easy. I don't want to mislead your listeners to say, wow, here's the switch and you just flick it and it's all done.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like that. And I had some times when I found it very difficult. Simple is not necessarily always easy. And one of the reasons I'll just even throw in here right now, one of the reasons why it's not completely all the time easy to make this shift is because things that we feel very comfortable about and assume to be kind of who we are and what's true about the world in our mind, things that we're quite identified, assumptions about who we are and the world, are ultimately, they can't be shown to be true. And they're ultimately a big part of the problem, that why we are spiritually asleep, because we're identified with the mind. We're identified with ideas about who we are in the world. We're identified with concepts and percepts. And the truth of life and the truth of who I am can never be discovered as a concept or a percept, because I am the conceiver or the perceiver. I'm the knower. I can never know who I am in truth, because I'm the knower.
Yeah.
Now, this sounds a little bit abstract, but as I show people in the book, and not just through reading the book, but I've been at pains to write this book in such a way that it's a process of self-discovery for the reader, very practical. That's why I refer to it often as a manual.
Yeah.
It's not about explaining some things and inviting people, you know, I'd like you to really take this on board and believe what I'm saying here. Look, here's the reasons why I'm saying it too. And no, don't believe anything that I say in the book. Read it and see if it rings a bell of recognition within you, and see if the many and varied activities and anecdotes that I relate about my own life, see if they ring true and give you a confirming experience of what I'm saying. And that's what will be your awakening. Because awakening cannot be a mental process. It can't be a process that's ultimately conveyed by the mind or appreciated and processed by the mind, because the process of awakening is the awakening of what's beyond the mind. I'll stop there, Danny. Let you have an input.
Please. And actually it's a perfect lead up to what I was going to run past your way next was like how you referenced that, simple, but not easy. So I was going to, you know, piggyback off of that with the thought about spiritual awakening in general, because I know that many of my listeners, you know, like something like this, Andrew, is like easy for people I don't want to say like us, like we're special, or, but we are different in our thought process. But for the person who maybe doesn't even consider himself spiritual, is it attainable for him or her? Like, is like spiritual awakening? Can anyone who doesn't even consider themselves the closest thing to spiritual, you know, have this awakening that you're alluding to in your book?
I would say the people who haven't thought a great deal about spirituality, not particularly familiar with a whole lot of you know, concepts and perspectives on spirituality, I would say that they might even be at a very distinct advantage.
That's very interesting. Tell me how.
And the reason is that spirituality has nothing to do with the mind's concepts of spirituality. A concept of spirituality, or words about spirituality, and obviously in the book I've written words about spirituality, they're only helpful if they point to and provide an avenue to experience what's beyond the words.
I love that.
But 99% of what's spoken and written in human culture about spirituality does not point effectively to what's beyond the words, but it locks people's minds into the words. And this is why the more we know about inverted commas, the more we know conceptually or think about and discuss and write about spirituality without actually being able to experience who we are beyond the mind, the bigger the hurdle placed in front of us to wake up spiritually is. Mm-hmm. And so this is why I say in the introduction to the book, this is predominantly not a book about spiritual concepts, because there are many people who know a lot of, who know a lot about spiritual concepts and talk about them a lot even, who are not spiritually awake. But there are many people who are very spiritual awake who hardly ever, if ever, think and talk about spiritual concepts.
Yeah, true.
Because being the formless awareness that is our true nature beyond the mind doesn't require, in fact, can be made trickier to kind of realize if we're caught up too much in thinking about things, even if they're inverted commas, thinking about spiritual things. Mm.
Great. I love that. In fact, seeing how you touched on the word real, I want to jump ahead here in my notes. I have it written down here. I was going to ask you, how can a spiritual awakening help us uncover what you consider real? And how can it disprove the illusions that we face in life?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And really, Danny, you could say,
now, how do we touch on what is real first?
It's the question. This is the question for every human being. What's real? Full stop. Question mark, rather. What's real? What's real about me? What's real about life? And here's why it's so seldom satisfactorily answered or realized. The reason it's so seldom, the answer is so seldom realized. I say realized rather than answered, because answered would suggest you get an idea, comes in the head. here's the concept that answers the question, what's real?
Yes.
But the reason it's so seldom realized in experience, shall we say, is that as human beings, from babyhood through childhood and into adulthood, we become the awareness, the consciousness, formless consciousness that is the essence of who we are, becomes identified with form, identified with concepts,
mm-hmm.
identified with ideas, identified with the mind. We think we are, we assume we are. We don't even think about it.
Yeah.
We assume I'm my mind. I'm the thoughts that come up and, you know, and the things that I've come to understand about me and the world around me. Thank goodness I've acquired this knowledge about me and the world around me. But the interesting thing is that what gets in our way of being who we really are and seeing what's real about the world around us is what we think we know.
Is what we think.
What we think. What we think we know, especially because thoughts will pop up and, you know, we might call that thinking, but if we don't attach any significance to them, they're not such a problem. But if we, once we latch onto something and say, well, this is my perspective on this, this is what I believe about, this is what I've discovered in my bitter experience, this is what's true, this is who I am, this is, you know, all this stuff
yeah.
is mental constructions of reality. They're not reality. An example I sometimes use.
I was going to chime in here and I was going to say, would you consider that, you know, like what I've read that you call conditioned assumptions, would that be one of those conditioned assumptions?
Well, what I've been describing, yeah, could be in general, could be referred to as our conditioned assumptions.
Yeah, because like you said,
all of what we assume we know is conditioned assumptions.
Yeah.
All of what we think we've learned about who we are and what life is like, what people are like, and so forth, all these mental constructions are conditioned. This kind of learning is basically conditioning.
I actually and loved how you phrased it that way, because like in our talks, when we try to like explain, I talk a lot about contrast and about duality in life, but that just leads back to what you're referencing as conditioned assumptions. Like we have that contrast, right? Because of that, since you said too, and it's true, since our birth, we have these conditioned assumptions that this is what we are, this body, our thoughts, but it doesn't represent the real, like you said.
No, it doesn't. What we think we know exists as imagination. It exists only in our mind. And we might say that, yeah, but I'm experiencing something here as well, you know, and it confirms what I have thought for so long, you know, understood, assumed, believed for mm-hmm. so long. Look, my experience is actually confirming it. Well, you know, there's a couple of chapters in the book that explain how this happens. Chapter 2 is how we start to take on so many conditioned interpretations of ourselves and the world around us. And Chapter 3 shows how the life that we come to experience is not a confirmation that what we came to assume about who I am mm-hmm. and the world around me is true. It's a reflection. It's created by the assumptions I have about who I am and the world around me. And so our experience can so often be assumed to be a confirmation that my perspective is valid and true, whereas actually it's only a reflection of the assumptions I've come to hold in my life about who I am and the world around me. For this reason, for many people, for all of humanity, actually, virtually, our life comes to be experienced as less than completely fulfilling. Let's just say, at the very highest level, it's less than completely fulfilling because it's a reflection of something which is ultimately not real,
yeah,
a mental construction, an illusion. Ultimately, an illusion comes to be played out and manifested in form,
mm-hmm.
the world of form, which also is just ultimately an illusion. For practical purposes, yes, it's real there and I can knock my head on the wall and it'll hurt. Okay, the world of form has a certain level of reality, but ultimately it's created out of thoughts of human consciousness. And because that the way we experience our life is a reflection of the assumptions we have about life, which are ultimately only constructed, they're conditioned constructions, emotional and mental constructions, they are ultimately can't give us satisfaction. And very often they'll give us very kind of clear dissatisfaction or emotional turmoil or unhappiness because we're experiencing something which doesn't reflect truth and a reality. It only reflects something which is a mentally constructed perspective on things.
Exactly.
And it comes back at us, as it were, it comes back at us to say, look, is this real? Does this feel right and real? Well, no. And it's kind of, that's the case. That's almost how it's set up to be. I'm mentioning in one part of the book about how suffering ultimately can be our best friend. There's that saying, one is that every cloud has a silver lining, but another one is there's no such thing as a problem without a gift for you in its hands. But ultimately, the suffering can be, oh, I know, here's the phrase I actually was trying to think of, blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Suffering can be a blessing in disguise. Now, it's not a blessing in disguise if you set the mind to work to analyze and debate every aspect of the suffering we're experiencing. No, but it can be a blessing in disguise if our suffering prompts us to question the assumptions, the mentally constructed assumptions we've been holding on to about who we are and about what life is like. When we question those assumptions and realize, and I show the reader in the book how to do this in very simple ways to question the thoughts and assumptions we have about who we are and about the world around us and about life. When we question those assumptions and realize that actually there's no way I can know for certain that that assumption is true. When we begin to question these mentally constructed assumptions about who we are and about life, which are actually then have been creating our experience of life, we find there's no way we can know those assumptions are true. They kind of dissolve. They lose their hold on us. We're no longer imprisoned, as it were, by them. And they begin to cease manifesting as our experience. And so on two levels, we begin to find life is so much more satisfying. It's so much more satisfying because we're not creating the kind of experiences that we had in the past been creating that we've been unhappy with. But also, whatever our experience is, we start to feel actually quite peaceful in the experiencing of whatever it is we're experiencing, because we're no longer identifying with and giving a label and a judgment to what I'm experiencing as bad, bad, bad. Because when we question our mental and judgmental response to what I'm experiencing as bad, we realize there's no way I can know for certain that it's bad. No way I can know for certain that all the flow and effects are going to be bad. Is it possible to think of some good things that may flow out of this? Yes, it certainly is. All these sorts of questions I lead the reader to experience. We begin to see that the thought crumbles. And when the thought crumbles, the negative emotion, the troubling emotion that had been triggered by believing the thought that things are bad or that I'm bad or what's happening to me is bad or shouldn't be that way, the emotion begins to crumble. When the thought crumbles and the emotion dissolves, what's left? Who I truly am is what's left. Peace filled, observing awareness, awake presence, the reality of who I am.
And that's a perfect tie-in right there, Andrew, to what I wanted to discuss next with you, because it's so prevalent in your book, is the concept of awareness, stepping outside of yourself, if you may, and actually the importance of becoming what you call, quote unquote, the noticer in your life. That's addressed throughout so many books that I've read in the past, and I'm sure that you have too, but it's so important when we can get to that stage of awareness where we actually become the noticer. Now, you go about it in your book in such a great way. Please delve into a little bit of that for my listeners.
Yeah, there's so much here. The I was going to use the word the secret of it all.
Nah, I hear you.
I hope it's not a secret any longer. This is the key. I mentioned a few minutes ago that from babyhood through childhood into adulthood, we become identified with form. Yes. We become identified with our thoughts and our emotions. We think they're real and we think they're true. We think they're who we are. That's all that being spiritually asleep is. And spiritual awakening is only this discovering the reality of who I am is something separate from and the observer of the things that previously I identified with. Mm-hmm. I'm the observer. I'm the formless, awake presence that observes an emotion that arises or observes a thought that comes up. In a very methodical way in the book, and I lead the reader in various different ways to the experience of this and the processing of this as experience, as a way of disidentifying from and being this formless beingness or formless consciousness, formless awareness, no longer identified with what I'm perceiving or what I'm conceiving, what's piping up in my
well
mind.
Said.
Now,
well said.
Here's a really subtle but important point about this noticing. You expressed correctly from my perspective, Danny, just now, my emphasis on being the noticer, which may to some of your listeners seem like a very subtle difference from noticing things.
Well, I was going to throw in too. Is that similar to like when people hear that someone had an out-of-body experience or something along those lines, like when someone is in some kind of maybe near-fatal accident and then they have an outer-body experience where they can actually like see their body laying there? Like, I know that's not exactly what you're referring to, but I know that so many of my listeners are thinking along those lines when you say be the noticer of our life. It doesn't have to get to having an out-of-body experience along those lines, right? But you can sense how people might think that's, you know, so I'm not
conceptually it's parallel. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Absolutely. I would agree with you that your listeners don't need to have any experience of or investigation into out-of-body experiences. But yes, that experience that occasionally people like do have is an example of and illustrates the point that the essence of who we are as human beings is a consciousness that notices our experience.
Yes.
Out-of-body experience just means, yeah, wow, here I am looking down on my body on the operating table. People are working on it. They're talking about me. Will this guy live or won't he live? People who've had that experience are, yes, this awareness looking down on their body. But so it isn't just an example that the essence of who we are is a consciousness. I'm not the body on the table. But let's for the moment, sort of to some extent, put that aside and come back to the distinction I want to draw for your listeners between noticing something and being the noticer. If we just one more thing about that, Danny, we could say about noticing. If in having this out of body experience, the consciousness that I am is aware that I'm this consciousness, wow, isn't it interesting that I'm here observing my body on the operating table being worked on? This is me being conscious that I'm noticing my body down
that
there on
body,
the operating
yes.
table.
Mm-hmm.
This is a subtle but important difference between just having the experience of seeing my body on the operating table, noticing that I'm here observing my body is different from just observing my body. Being the noticer, which I do talk about a lot in the book, being the noticer, being conscious that I am being the noticer right now, is being awake. Mm. Just doing the noticing and being identified with what I'm noticing, I'm noticing that I'm feeling angry. I'm noticing this thought that's going round and round in my head about such and such. People could say, yes, I'm noticing that, and often there's a suggestion and encouragement for people to notice things around them with their senses. Okay, here's this table. It's brown, it's made of wood, lumber, you would say in the States.
Yes.
here's this, I'm noticing this, I'm hearing, yes, that bird, there it is. This noticing is not enough, because everybody would kind of say, yeah, I've noticed lots of things during my life. I've seen lots of things. I've heard lots of things. I've thought lots of things. I've perceived lots of things in, you know, various senses. So I've noticed lots of things. Yes. Is that enough? Is that what you're saying? Mm. No, it's not quite what I'm saying. Because when we notice things, most human beings, when we notice things, when we perceive things, and when we conceive things in our head, we're identified with those things. We're not conscious. We're not aware. We're not noticing that I'm this awareness noticing that thought. I'm not this awareness noticing that I'm noticing this wooden table. I'm not, you know, so this is not just a mental game to be played. And I want to emphasize this to your listeners. And I explain again, lead people to experience again through the book in a very experiential way. This is not just a playing with thoughts about, you know, what I'm perceiving and so forth, but an experiential thing. Now, there's two little things that I will relate here now, Danny, for your listeners to begin to get in this moment a sense of this. And then come back to, and if I forget, Danny, bring me back to the thing about questioning our thoughts, okay? But let's just go back to some things that your listeners can notice. And I relate, but one of these two things I relate in the book. If your listeners think back to when they were a little child, 5, 8, 10 years old, did they feel like they were them? And most of your listeners are going to say, sure, yeah, I did. When you were in your mid-teens, did you feel like you were you? Yeah, sure, I did. When you were 20, when you were 30, when you were 40, did you feel like you were you? Yeah, I did. I've always felt like I was me. Now, that feeling that you are you is you. This sense, mostly it's been in the background, I'm the me, I'm the awareness that's having this experience. But if your listeners think back to when they were 5 or 8 or 10, you know, they might think, I was in such and such a role. I was in elementary school, and I remember one day I rode my bike and fell off and skinned my knee. And when I was 15, I remember, you know, I still felt like I was me, but I was now in high school. I was a high school student. And I remember feeling very embarrassed when I, you know, got a very low score in my spelling test and it was revealed in the class. And I felt really stupid and embarrassed. Mm. And when I was 20, yeah, I still felt like I was me, but I was at that time, then I'd become a carpenter, or I was a nurse then. And when I was 35, I did this and, you know, experienced that and so forth. What people are beginning to notice, hopefully, is that they can't be any of the emotions that they feel from time to time, because they've always felt like they were them. That's a constant. And yet their emotions have gone higgledy-piggledy all over the place. They've had highs and lows and a lot of stuff in the middle.
Sure.
And they can't be the roles that they've had, because one time they were an elementary school student, then they were a high school student, then they were a carpenter or a nurse, to use my examples. Mm-hmm. So nurse can't be who you are, because you were you when you were five and just in elementary school. An elementary school student can't be who you are, because you're still who you are and you're no longer an elementary school student. And if you think about any of the thoughts that you've had about you and the world and people, have any of those thoughts or beliefs changed over your life from when you were 10, 20, 30, 40?
Think about that.
Well, sure.
Right?
And some of people I talk to say, some of mine have done a complete 180, some of my beliefs and assumptions.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
Your beliefs about you and the world can't be anything to do with who you are, because you've always been who you are. And yet your thoughts and beliefs have changed. So hopefully this very, very simple illustration and experience that your listeners are just having and processing right now gives a little hint about how the essence of who they are is actually nothing to do with their body, which has changed very much over all those years. It's nothing to do with the roles that they've had in life. It's nothing to do with the things that give them pleasure or you know, make them bored, because those things have changed over the different
over time, like you said. That's great.
Your concerns, your priorities, all these things have changed. So who you really are is this formless awareness that's actually been mostly in the background, but the kind of observer or the witness of your life. Now, here's another little thing that your listeners can do right now. And in a moment, we're going to go silent for about 5 or 7 or 10 seconds, maybe, as your listeners do this little thing. I'm going to invite your listeners now to ask yourself this simple question. I wonder what the next thought to pop in my mind will be. Okay. So that will hopefully have been long enough that most of your listeners will have noticed two things. The first is, for most people, a thought will have popped in the mind. Mm-hmm. And for many people, that'll have been actually kind of something out of the blue, as it were, something quite, as it were, random. I remember when I kept a pet rabbit, for example, just something unpredicted and unsought for. Some thought would have popped in the mind. But also, I think that many of your listeners will have noticed that for a while there, as they began, as they asked that question and waited in silence for the thought to pop up, they will have noticed that I'm here waiting, waiting, waiting. Ah, there's a thought.
So that gap, right? You know, like in other words, that gap between them hearing your voice and they were processing thoughts as you were speaking to when you went silent and to when they had that next thought, whatever it may be, that's what we're talking about, that essence, that awareness, that emptiness.
That's right. As it were, empty awareness. And they'll have noticed that, wow, a lot of people are quite stunned by this very simple.
It's a great test there, my friend. I'm going to use that one. I'm going to use that in some of my talks.
Well, you know, I'm the awareness. This is me. I'm the awareness. That's who I am. Noticing thoughts that pop up in my mind. This begins this process of disidentifying from our thoughts, disidentifying from our emotions, something your listeners can do from time to time throughout, you know, each day, not just waiting for major things to happen. But if you have an emotion arise, mm-hmm. like, oh, damn it, I'm feeling so frustrated. Someone said they'd ring me, and it's an hour after they said they'd ring me, and they still haven't, you know, whatever it might be, frustration, annoyance, whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a bigger thing might happen, you know, a big loss happens and people, you know, think, oh, I feel so devastated, or I feel grief, or I feel whatever it might be. If you, first of all, consciously acknowledge, I'm feeling angry, or I'm feeling frustrated, or I'm feeling disappointed, or I'm feeling so much grief and sadness, whatever it is. First, acknowledge that the emotion is there. Oh, I feel angry. Then shift to saying to yourself, I am the awareness noticing a feeling of anger.
It instantly has to remove stress, right? At the very least. If people can grasp that, I've always said that too, Andrew. Just something like that has to immediately take some stress off of our very stressful lives. If you can remove yourself and say, this suffering, which is an illusion to begin with, that I'm feeling or that I perceive that I'm feeling, is that's not me. I am the awareness witnessing that. I'm observing that. I'm the noticer, like you say. Great stuff. I love that.
Yes, and this is, without wanting to mislead your listeners into about this word simple, and that it's just, we've covered enough right now and they may as well just turn the podcast over. without them drawing that conclusion that it's actually so simple, this is basically all that spiritual awakening is and requires. It requires noticing that I'm this awake presence, and I'm observing such and such a thought coming up or such and such an emotion coming up. I'm not those things. I'm the awake presence. Now, I want to come back to where we were discussing earlier on about when, we're really virtually there anyway, as we're talking here about a way to respond to emotions. And I explain in the book, when an emotion arises, this is the first thing to do that's very helpful. Notice that, even say to yourself, even verbalize, I'm the awareness noticing a feeling of anger or frustration or whatever it might be. And this immediately brings this space between who you are and something that you're noticing. You're not the thing that you're noticing, you're the observer of it. And this helps to radically reduce the intensity of the emotion. Then, as I explain in the book, look to see what was the thought that triggered the emotion. Let's go back to the very initial thing I said. Somebody who said they'd phone me, and it's an hour after they said they'd phone me, and they still haven't. Now, it's not the experience that the person hasn't phoned me yet that's causing me to feel frustration. What's causing me to feel frustration is that a thought has popped up, and I'm believing this thought, that the fact that they haven't phoned me yet is bad. They said they would, they haven't yet, and that's bad. That's what triggers the annoyance, mm-hmm. or the frustration or the anger. As somebody I was relating a similar example to once said to me, oh yeah, it's like, say I was cooking dinner and time slipped away and I hadn't even noticed that that person hadn't phoned me when they said they would. An hour just went past, I wouldn't be feeling frustrated or angry that they hadn't phoned me, because the thought hasn't popped up in my mind. They haven't phoned me and that's bad. Exactly. Even though the reality, the fact is, yes, it's an hour after they said they'd phone and they haven't. So it's not the fact, it's never what we experience that troubles us. What troubles us is that we have a thought and we believe a thought that what I've experienced shouldn't be that way. It's bad. It's wrong, or it's not good enough. It's insufficient, or I'm not enough. I'm not. Anytime these thoughts about who I am and the world around me pop up and we believe the thought, we suffer.
Yeah.
So the trick is then, this is a large part of what the book is about, to give people this experience of discovery, and also why I encourage people to read the book over and over again, because it'll be like the onion with the layers. And every time they read it and they experience this, and also as I provide some tools toward the end of the book, how they can have a kind of a little mechanism of reminding themselves easily throughout each day how to come back to cutting through any emotion and any thought that they're getting caught up in, see that there's no way that they can know that that's true. It brings them back into being okay with the present moment, with what I'm experiencing. A lot of people are recommending that we be in the here and now. But that's mighty tough, and certainly mighty tough to sustain if we're still having this background assumption that we grow into as human beings, a very deeply held assumption that the thoughts that I experience are who I am and that they're true, basically. So then we can, you know, coach ourselves to be in the present moment. But it's tough and it's hard to sustain it because there's still this background thing. Another thought pops up and we're suddenly identified with it. But if we use this mechanism of questioning our thoughts, and I show people how, the reader how, to go through a very simple process of realizing, wow, there's no way I can know that thought that's just popped up is true. I can't know what all the flow and effects, and it's just as possible it could have some consequences that I might think of as good, and somebody else might see that thing as in a very different way as being quite okay. And after all, I'm just noticing, first of all, it's only a thought. It's not the reality. I can't actually touch, you know, here on my nose is the fact that it's bad, that no, it's not physical anywhere. Mm. And also, that thought just popping up, I'm the awareness that's noticing the thought. So in all these various ways, we discover, wow, the thought just loses its hold over us. It's seen to be what it is, nothing.
Wow.
Imagination only. What is left when the emotion and the thought are seen to be nothing? We're awake. That's spiritual awakening. In a few moments, not 500 lifetimes, not 5 decades. Mm. Spiritual awakening is not something like flicking a switch. But in this book, I've given an explanation that I invite people to say, does this ring true for you? And then a whole lot of experiences to help people to have this experience. Wow, back to who I am. Wow, back to who I am. One of the things I emphasize early on in the book is spiritual awakening is nothing to do with fixing yourself. And it's nothing to
That's
do.
That's a misnomer a lot of people make.
Oh, it's a huge one out there. And it's nothing to do with, one day I'll evolve into a higher consciousness. No, it's not about that. It's spiritual development is a very common phrase. Throw it out. You don't need to develop anything to wake up spiritually. And here's the obvious. Why don't you need to develop anything to evolve spiritually? Because you already are who you really are. And all that's getting in the way of you being awake
is to that being fact awake.
Is that you're identified with the thought.
With that said, my friends, listen, this has been such a great talk here with my good friend Andrew Seaton. Spiritual awakening made simple. I'll tell you, please, by all means, my friends, go out there, buy the book. Tune in to all of Andrew's stuff here because it's so, so real. It'll make you question everything, which is Andrew's intention here. Because like he said, we don't have to develop per se spiritually because this is what we are. We have to get some of the clutter, some of the illusion out of the way that we've been dealt with as soon as we incarnate into this being. We're instantly thrust into a world of contrast. And this is the issue. This is what separates us. We get buried into this world. But Andrew, again, please tell my listeners where they can find all of your info and sites and this wonderful book once more, please.
Yeah, thank you, Danny. Well, the book is on Amazon and pretty much everywhere online as an ebook and a paperback, and it's in bookstores. A lot of other information about the book and about my online mentoring and counseling, information about that are on my website at awakeningmadesimple.org.
Wonderful.
Look forward to hearing from people.
Wonderful. So my friends, thank you again for listening to the podcast I'm calling That Oneness Guy. This has been episode number 25, an interview with spiritual author Andrew Seaton. If you like what you've been listening to, please take a moment to subscribe to this feed. You can find That Oneness Guy on any and all of your favorite podcasting sites and apps. And as I mentioned earlier, I also have started some vlogs recently, which is brief 10-minute, I would say, episodes where I'm speaking on a subject, and then I start to add a song of mine as well, too. So I end every one of those episodes with a song. So they're cool, and they're under 10 minutes, like I said. So check them out. You can always follow me on YouTube, LinkedIn, and Blogger. And for my Twitter friends, I have got myself back on Twitter because I'm seeking the next publishing house for my next book. And a lot of the feedback that I'm getting from these publishers is, what is your Twitter presence? So with that said, I did go back on and I opened up a That Oneness Guy Twitter page where you can follow me as well too. So by all means, look me up. Touch base with my websites, which you know are thatonenessguy.com, dannyrongo.com, and from my book, iamgodbook.com. And as I mentioned about publishing for my new book, please stay tuned for all of my information. That book will be called The Ways of Oneness, Helping to Navigate Life. So with that said, I want to thank my good friend from down under, Mr. Andrew Seaton. Thank you again, my friend. It was a pleasure. My name is Danny Rongo. I am That Oneness Guy. Please look out for my next show. And until then, as always, I send you peace, love, light, and continued oneness. Namaste.